The fix is in. The showbiz manipulations of the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, and NASCAR. Brian Toohey is the author. Will continue this investigation into the dark forces that shape our sports experiences. We watch something thinking that it's a real competition when Brian Toohey argues there are way too many hands, way too many fingerprints on the outcome on the sports pages to say that it's a pure competition. And what else does that mean? Well, it means that from the very top, frequently, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball send down a cue that says this is the outcome we want. He says he can prove that, makes a pretty good case for the book. NASCAR is a little bit different. We'll talk about that next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, the fix is in. If you're just joining us, last hour, we talked about the World Cup and whether or not that could have been a fixed goal. The one that was seemingly so easy to have stopped, let in, allowed the USA to tie England. There is precedent for that type of fixing in World Cup soccer. Not that it happened. It could just be that the English goalie in BP Green, in fact, his name is Green, that the English goalie just couldn't stop the ball because he had, you know, oil on his hands. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, either way, the fix is in so many sports. We know that verifiably for what we see in the news headlines, but there's a lot more behind the scenes than any league wants to talk about. And since they control the strings and there's a lot of corporate interest and a lot of political interest, which we'll get into coming up, on keeping these sports teams happy, that we'll never really know to what degree. It really is a giant conspiracy of silence. Brian Toohey's doing his best to turn over that rock. So we were talking about NASCAR. How is NASCAR ever fixed, Brian?
Well, if you can fix a horse race, which we know hundreds if not thousands of horse races can be fixed since there's somebody sitting on top of the animal, you could fix a car race in the same way. You just don't drive as fast as you should. It's pretty simple.
Okay, but why would they? What would be the market force for slowing down? And what evidence do we ever have that they would ever want to slow down?
Well, the interesting thing is NASCAR is the only one of the five sports I discuss in the book that actually has what they call a legend about races being fixed. It's called the call. And the call is that somebody within NASCAR calls a certain driver or calls several drivers and says either, hey, today's your day or today's not your day. And the reason they do this, as the legend goes, is because NASCAR runs on sponsorship. It runs on money. That's the reason the cars go around and around, is because of the logos that are sitting on top of their hoods. And without that sponsorship money, cars don't drive. And that's how the call happens, is they say, hey, a certain thing needs to happen today because we need to, you know, bolster a certain sponsor. And that's how why certain races are run in certain ways, according to the legend.
Okay, so let's get beyond legend. What do we know for fact? What are some of the ways in which cars have been juiced or teams have been alleged to have fixed races?
Well, they have to inspect cars before every race because car owners are apparently trying to cheat at every race. The interesting thing is NASCAR rules can sometimes almost change from week to week. They can see that, you know, supposedly like Ford's cars aren't doing good this week or Chevy's cars are doing well this season, and they'll change what they allow within the makeshifts of these makeup of these so-called stock cars, that they'll give, you know, extra body length or body width or spoiler height or that sort of thing to adjust these cars in hopes of trying to make it fair. But a lot of times it just seems like it makes it unfair in one way or the other. But then the owners will go in and they've done a lot of things. I mean, they've added extra weight to cars that they'll dump on the track during race. They'll stick things underneath the pedals so when they test the car, it's not full out, but then take those things out from underneath the gas pedal. So during the race, the car is running full out.
Yeah, you mentioned this about
things
like magnets underneath the pedal. What did that mean? I didn't know if I quite understood what that. Why would a team want to have a car that tested slower than it can actually perform?
Well, because then it'll pass inspection at running at the proper rate. But then when they get on the track, they get rid of those spacers, and now they can actually go faster than they had tested out as.
Okay.
So suddenly the car's going faster than it should have, because basically they weren't putting the gas pedal to the metal, basically, because they couldn't.
So cheating. And this is so there's a governor that's put on how fast a car can go. I mean, wouldn't it just be the fastest car wins?
It was like a horsepower thing, I guess. I'm not a car person, so I'm not, you know, savvy on how, you know, the actual makeshift of the engines and that sort of thing. But yeah, that was the idea, was that, you know, it would pass inspection, because the inspections are done wide open in the garages for everyone to supposedly see. But then, of course, the car goes back into the, you know, the regular garage, and they could still tinker with it and mess with it when, you know, no one's looking.
And they found stuff too. And then later on, as I mentioned, the lowest level mechanic ends up always being responsible for it.
Well, yeah, they always, I mean, they had those before one of the recent, name slips me, Daytona 500s. Michael Waltrip's car got busted for having some sort of illegal substance in the engine, which even to this day, nobody supposedly knows what exactly it was. And even though Waltrip was the owner of the car and the driver of the car, he, of course, claimed he had no idea who had done this, and it wound up, like you said, falling to the lowest man on the totem pole, and he's the one who wound up getting fired for the alleged infraction.
Right. That's such a curiosity that we still don't know what the substance was. Wouldn't that be in their best interest to say, this is the substance, don't let this, you know, get used in any car, we're on the prowl looking for substance X?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, supposedly, I've heard one report that it's supposedly some sort of component of jet fuel that they were sticking in there. But I've never heard an actual statement of what they actually found. And that goes, NASCAR is weird because they keep a lot of things secret. Like, supposedly, their drug testing list is secret. No driver knows what's exactly on their banned substance list. And one driver, I forgot who it was, just recently spoke to ESPN and said that he's seen the list, and it's like almost as thick as a phone book. But he really doesn't know what all drugs are on that list. Yet they test their drivers for substances that are, you know, illegal to NASCAR, but drivers don't even know what they are.
Well, that could end up making a difference when it comes to the call, right? I mean,
exactly, because then, which I think can happen in any sport, is when a league controls their drug testing, which every league does, they control what's a banned substance, they run the tests, and then they get the results. Again, there's no oversight. So a league could get, you know, NASCAR could get a result on a driver that says he tested positive for whatever this banned substance was. They could go to the driver and said, you tested positive, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to make this, you know, a national thing to say that you're, whatever, a cocaine user, a, you know, steroid user or whatever? Or do you want to maybe not do so well this week? Do you not want to win this week? Do you want to lose? Which would you prefer?
Right.
And it's a very easy way to blackmail it. And it'd be a very easy way to keep all these things under wraps, because, again, no one's looking out above the league. They have their own oversight. So, you know, what's a player going to do 10 years from now? Go, you know, I tested positive for drugs, and they didn't suspend me because I intentionally fixed a game for them. No one's ever going to say that. That's why some of these things probably never come to light.
Right. Very interesting. Talking with Brian Toohey, the author of The Fix Is In. We haven't mentioned hockey, and again, if you're just tuning in, you can go back either in Streamlink or grab the book. It's fascinating. Major League Football, baseball, basketball, and hockey, and all of the ways in which these big leagues may fix the outcomes, not just of individual games, but whole series, or create storylines, a story arc for a particular team or for a particular player, because they see that this person is marketing and testing so well that they want to sell more jerseys, they want to get more, you know, fans to come out and see it. So they have to kind of create a reason for you to come out and watch these teams, when in fact the outcome may be controlled all along, and it's not a pure competition as we think it is. The NHL, I guess I've never heard much about any NHL refs, and I don't really think about the NHL is having all of that much money involved that anybody would bother to fix it. And I mean, in terms of like broadcasting and stuff, you know, except for the Stanley Cup, really, you know, hockey ratings have never really been a big winner in broadcasting.
No, but hockey's done a really odd thing, and the NHL has basically their fan base, you would assume, is in Canada. That's where hockey's the national sport. That's people of hockey. But instead, the NHL has been slowly drifting its teams more and more south.
Oh, sure.
And more teams have come into the southern United States. And the odd thing, which is why I think this may be manipulated, is they've had a lot of success with these southern teams.
Why does that surprise you? I guess I would disagree with you on that.
Well, because it seems very odd that, like, the Quebec Nordiques existed for a long time. They never had any success. Then the year they moved and became the Colorado Avalanche, they won the Stanley Cup. The Minnesota North Stars lasted for a long time. Minnesota suddenly moved to Dallas, and, like, 3 years later, they won the Stanley Cup. Hartford right. Whalers did the same thing. They moved out of Hartford down to Carolina to become the Hurricanes. Suddenly, they won a Stanley Cup. It seemed very odd that they were moving out of these hockey hotspots in yeah. these southern areas, and suddenly they'd win Stanley Cups. And what, you know, brings fans in is winners. And, you know, you bring hockey into Carolina, people are like, what's hockey? Well, all of a sudden, hey, your team's playing for the Stanley Cup. People are paying attention. Suddenly, hockey's back on the map. And the same thing happened in Chicago with the Blackhawks. For the past 10 years, the Blackhawks have been non-existent as a franchise. You listen to sports radio in Chicago, no one talked about Blackhawk hockey until 2 years ago. Until suddenly the Blackhawks got good, and suddenly everyone's talking about Blackhawks hockey.
Okay, but,
and they win the cup, and all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork.
Sure.
Was that natural, or was that maybe rigged because Chicago's the third biggest market in the United States?
All right, well, that may be where your argument runs into trouble with me, because you give a team a drought long enough. I mean, even, you know, one of these days the Cubbies are going to win a World Series. It's
really?
Just, it's statistically, it's like impossible for them to never win a World Series. They're going to someday. The planets are going to line up just right. I mean, they almost made it to the series a couple of times. But, you know, a couple of bad, you know, cursed things happen. And next thing you know, they're back at zero again. But I mean, I want to go back to your point about the southern teams. I mean, in terms of those teams moving south, that shouldn't be a surprise, because there are many more people who live in this, in many of these southern markets, that aren't from those southern markets. I mean, you know, for example, that, you know, I think it's only, I don't know what the current percentage is, but when I lived in Atlanta, only about 15% of the people in Atlanta were born in Atlanta. It's a huge influx of Yankees. And the same thing is true, I think, with any of those Sunbelt cities. A lot of Yankees, a lot of hockey-loving Yankees move to the South.
Well, that's Phil Esposito. He bought and put the Tampa Bay Lightning in existence.
Right.
You know, there's so many retired people from New York and up north coming to Florida. The hockey should thrive down there.
Right, and they got the money for it. I mean, those are the people that can afford to pay the money for the tickets for these games, is people who have a little bit. And, you know, gosh, Atlanta, Florida, it might as well be New Jersey in some places. You know, it's not really a southern city per se. I mean, it certainly is in many wonderful, glorious ways, and I loved living in Atlanta, but it's got a lot of other influences there that have nothing to do with southern culture. So, and then a lot of these markets, they've had AAA hockey teams for years. And
oh,
some
yeah,
of them.
Like Columbus. And
yeah,
Atlanta.
Right. So, I mean, in a way, that's not terribly surprising. But your point about they move south and boom, they have a Stanley Cup. That's interesting to me. Statistically, that's interesting. Do we know what the breakdown is, what the odds are that a new team should move to a new city and win the Stanley Cup? I'd love to see what the odds are for
I
that happening.
I'd like to, too, because that'd be very interesting. Because if you look at the NBA, the exact opposite has happened. The NBA in the past 20 years, you've basically had either the Bulls, Lakers, or San Antonio Spurs in the finals.
Right.
You never get small market teams in the NBA finals. Never.
You even go back.
That seems more statistically odd than actually what happens in the NHL, is how the Lakers, Celtics, Bulls, Knicks, those are the teams that always wind up in the NBA, which is why most people think the NBA is the most rigged of all the sports. Because it's always their big market teams.
Or they just rig it for different reasons. I mean, if you're saying that, you know, it just may be the business model for the NHL is different than the business model for the NBA.
Well, and exactly, because the NHL wants to get as many fans as they can dig up. I mean, they're almost still a growing league.
Well, I would say that maybe the NHL's business model is to get butts in the seats. The NBA's business model is to get butts on the couches.
Yeah.
That they know the TV ratings are what's going to drive that. The NHL isn't going to see the big TV return, but they got to get people through the turnstiles
first, but then the TV will come.
Yeah. We're talking about the showbiz manipulations of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and NASCAR with Brian Tuohy. So you can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Well-argued book. Lots of components to this. A lot of moving pieces to this argument, but you lay it out there. So we've talked about the officiating. We've talked about the players. We've talked about the gambling. We've talked about many of the individual sports. Let's talk about the politics a little bit, because there are, you know, these stadiums are a big deal for teams to get new stadiums, and a lot of factors go into a team getting a new stadium that are mostly political and financial and have very little to do with whether or not the team is a winner or not.
Well, the worst thing I think of the stadium deals is more likely than not, and it's probably every time, the city gets jobbed by these professional teams. I mean, they get ripped off. Like when New York built the new baseball stadiums for the Yankees and the Mets, I mean, they lost literally billions of dollars to build those two stadiums. They lost it in tax breaks. They lost it in property taxes. They lost it in the property itself that they gave to these teams. And all the money goes to the teams. It does not go to the city. It goes to the teams. And so basically these teams are really publicly supported, but the fans don't get any break on ticket sales or ticket prices. They don't get break on parking. They get nothing out of it besides saying we're a major league city.
Well, okay, but I let's pick at that a little bit more, because I remember reading this part and I thought, okay, you give the numbers. Maybe you can remember them off the top of your head. The average household income for the average, say, Major League Baseball attendee is what? You remember?
I believe at the time the study was done, it was like $50,000 and up.
Okay, but that really, when it comes to the skyboxes and to the other aspects, to the majority of the game's season ticket holders, the income goes way up. Then it's like more in the area of like $100,000. So there's a big money aspect to these games. So the people who are attending them are businessmen, where a lot of these skyboxes are bought on business accounts, and that there is, it seems like it's almost like a tax break for the wealthy, that you could get access to these games that the average person isn't going to be able to afford. So a lot of tax money is being redirected to build a beautiful new facility for people who are wealthier than average, in some cases very wealthy, to enjoy a sports night. True?
Oh, exactly true. I mean, even when the one guy did a study, which I used in the book, about how the ticket prices went up when these new stadiums were built. And all the ticket prices went up like 50% or more from the season before, just because there was a new stadium. And again, who can, what do they say? An average, family of four to go to a baseball game these days costs them well over $100 to attend a single game, if not more, because of the rising ticket prices.
Well,
and again, it's the tax money that built the stadium, but nobody gets a break to enter the stadium. They don't even get to name the stadium. It gets, sold to the highest bidder, so some corporation can name it.
Well, we'll talk more about that, and then how you think that influences the fix. I'd be curious how that influences how the fix is in the showbiz manipulations of the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, and NASCAR. I'm a big sports fan, but there are lots of times when I watch the outcome of a game and I just shake my head. My team might even have won, but I look at that and go, that was one weird call, or that was one weird decision by a coach. How did that happen? And if you can accept Brian's argument, it happens because the leagues have it in their best interest to decide up front what's going to happen, so they know what to promote, so they know how to draw people in. They have to keep recreating these storylines every year or so, and that means to some degree, the fix is in. More on this coming up before we get to your questions on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We're talking about The Fix is In, the showbiz manipulations of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and NASCAR. Back to the World Cup today, briefly. FIFA is looking at an interesting story out of Johannesburg where Soccer City, a big section of seats at Soccer City, was unoccupied during the World Cup opening match between South Africa and Mexico, and nobody knows why. The upper-tier section, about 200 seats, filled by tournament volunteers later on, but somehow the entire section was empty. Huh. Nobody knows how that happened. How weird. We'll get to the bottom of that. There's a lot of things to get to the bottom of when it comes to sports. Just who's investigating? In whose financial interest is it to investigate? Is ESPN going to do that? I don't think so. I mean, ABC, NBC, CBS, they're all trying to get the contracts, not blow the contracts. So it takes somebody like Brian Toohey to lay it out, and he will, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, the fix is in. We're talking with Brian Toohey. So we're talking politics, too. And then we'll get to all of your questions coming up, specific games, ways in which things that you've always suspected were involved. The big picture here is that politicians are very interested in making sure that their big donors are taken care of. And frequently the big donors to any political cause can be some of the people associated with the major league sports in any one town. They've got some pretty deep pockets. Plus, they can lend a lot of credibility to a campaign to be associated with, you know, popular sports figures, et cetera. So in a way, no big surprise that there's a serious intertwining between professional sports and politics. But to what degree that influences the fix, Brian, that's what I want to ask.
Well, I think the big thing to think about with sports is going back and thinking about what happened in Roman times and think about how the Roman senators intentionally put on the gladiatorial competitions to distract the population while they got away with murder, basically. And if you bring that to the modern day, it could very well be the same kind of situation because sports consumes so many people's lives, especially a lot of men in this country, a lot of young men, that it distracts them from what's really going on and what's important in the world. And I think that's something that people really need to consider is how much time and effort is put into following sports that could be very well spent doing a lot of better things.
So you make the bread and circuses argument.
Yeah, because I think it's a very valid thing because it would make sense why there is a major league, you know, stadium in every big city in this country because it's an easy way to distract people. Sure, it's a great pastime. It's a great way, you know, to lose 3 hours on a, you know, summer afternoon, go watch a baseball game. That's fine, but it has become such, like you say, it consumes so many people that become such hardcore fans and they build their, you know, personal identity off of these teams that they are depressed when they lose and they're elated when their teams win, even though they had absolutely nothing to do with the game. It's something I think that a lot of people should concern themselves about.
If you are not a believer in professional sports, you can, for a lot of reasons, you can feel left out of a culture. I kind of feel sorry for sometimes for non-sports people during peak seasons, you know, in any city's life cycle can involve the success of its team and how it brings people together. And I think that that is a valid reason to keep professional sports or to have teams like that. Although it doesn't justify the enormous amount of money that's spent or perhaps the new stadiums, although I happen to be a big fan of the new Target Field here in the Twin Cities, or for that matter, the financial impact of the XL Center, which is in St. Paul, which is where the Wild play, and downtown St. Paul was, you know, was on life support. They build the XL, or the X as it's called here in town. And that whole area with restaurants, it's all brought back to life. It's amazing.
What happened to the area around the Metrodome, though, where everybody evacuated from now, basically?
Well, okay, fair enough, except that, you know, in a lot of ways...
Well, that's wait, the big wait, wait, question. Wait, but, is, well, they've done studies Like when the Baltimore Colts left to move to Indianapolis, they said, well, you know, Baltimore is no longer a major league city. They're going to suffer. Well, they've done analysis, and really these major league teams don't bring in extra money. They actually sometimes they do worse because the fans who would have spent money to go see these games wind up doing other things. They do other cultural things and artistic, you know, endeavors. They go to plays and concerts and that sort of thing. So the city doesn't lose that entertainment money. It just goes to a different area than sports.
Well, okay, let me go back to your comment about the Metrodome, which, you know, one of the typical domes of the Vikings playing it. The Twins had played in it. My God, I'm surprised the Timberwolves didn't play in it. I mean, it's just, it is an awful place for sports. It's an awful place for football.
I know what it's like.
Yeah, it's appropriate for monster truck rallies and circuses. It really, there's no point in baseball just was never fit there, and it's awful. But that, I think the difference is that the way it's situated was especially true. It was sort of, you know, it's surrounded by roads and all of these. There wasn't really in parking lots, and there really wasn't the kind of community feel to it like you have with the new Target Field. And I think they designed that right. So everything's within walking distance, bars, restaurants, you know, other attractions. It does become kind of a focal point of the economy of Minneapolis. But I take your greater point that that may not be true everywhere. It probably isn't true everywhere, but it serves as a great diversion. But it also serves as something where a lot of people of different economic backgrounds, not everybody, not evenly, but a lot of people do come together for sporting events. And that is one way of keeping communities together, don't you think?
For how long, though? Like this whole Blackhawks thing, like they had a huge rally in Chicago for the Blackhawks. And, you know, a week later, so what? It's over.
Okay.
You know, well, I mean, how long does that really keep a community together? Does it bring them together for that short period of time, or does it really keep them locked together for a longer period of time?
All right.
It's really the short period of time, and then people forget now, you know.
And they need another thing.
Fans are thinking about the White Sox or the Cubs or the upcoming Bears season. They're, you know, off on some other tangent.
But I think that's part of it. So probably the same people that are together for the Blackhawks will come together for the Cubbies, who come together for the Bears. I mean, I think that there is I do think that's one way that communities can stay together. They give people heroes to focus on that become emblematic of what that city is about. I mean, I'm afraid of getting too cynical about sports in the sense I do think sports plays a role.
But I think you're rooting, though, for a logo. You're not like the Chicago Blackhawks, again, take the example. They're not a team of actual Chicago kids became the Blackhawks. They're Canadians, they're, you know, Europeans.
Right.
They're from all over. They're not really a Chicago team. They just, because they wear that logo, next year Chicago Blackhawks are still going to be the Blackhawks, but you know what? There's probably going to be 5, 6, 7, 8 guys who were on last year's team that aren't on this year's team, but they're still going to be the Blackhawks.
Well, I'll go with you to point on that, but come on, how many people in Chicago are Native American? Everybody's an import from somewhere in Chicago, most of them from Poland and from other European countries. And
but they have, you know, they live in Chicago. I mean, even the players for the Blackhawks don't even live in Chicago. Dane, who's one of their stars, lives in Buffalo.
Right. Well, that's where he's from. That's his hometown. So, I mean, you can't hate him too much for still living in his hometown.
I'm not saying you should hate him. I don't know if it really does bring the community together. Like you say, I think it distracts people from the dirty Chicago politics they should be paying attention to that's running the, you know, city into the ground.
I'd like to make and both argument as opposed to an either or. So I get what you're saying. The fix is in the showbiz manipulations of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and NASCAR. If you had to, before we get to the phones coming up, if you, Brian Toohey, had to give a list of some of the top games that were fixed or the top fixing events that we can be said absolutely verifiably this was fixed, what would they be and how many of them are in modern times?
Well, most of them would probably be in modern times, but it's one of those things, again, you talk about the proof of it. What I consider proof and what you would maybe have proof in a court would probably be two different things because, again, they're not going to fix a game. You know, they didn't probably fix Super Bowl III, which I think they fixed for the Jets to win, by putting it on NFL letterhead. They did it all kind of behind the scenes. So for me, you have to look at what surrounded the game to determine it was fixed. Like one of the things that recently happened was the 2008 NBA Finals between the Celtics and Lakers. I think that was set up to get those two teams into that finals. And the reason why is the year before, the NBA had their lowest ratings, television ratings, for the finals in years. I think it was like 25 years they had the lowest ratings. In the following offseason, they signed their biggest TV deal in their history. Now, the ratings are going down, but they signed the biggest deal, gives them nearly $1 billion a season from ESPN and ABC. So now, suddenly, the Lakers and Celtics wind up in the NBA Finals, and the NBA Finals are up 50% than they were the year before. Now, is that just a happy coincidence for the NBA that those two teams, which represent both the East Coast and the West Coast, and are also the two most storied teams in NBA's history, wind up in the finals right after they signed this big contract after having these terrible ratings? Is that just coincidence? A lucky bounce of the ball? Or was that set up because they needed to pay back ABC and ESPN for that huge contract they gave them?
Right.
To me, that signifies a fix, but I can't prove that it was fixed, but it seems very, very coincidental.
All right. Give me some other examples. So ones that people will remember just like that.
Well, another one would be like Dale Earnhardt Senior, Jr., after his father died at Daytona. The very next time NASCAR came back to Daytona was for, I think it's the Pepsi 400, and it happened to be a night race. It also happened to be the very first race that NASCAR had under their new broadcast deal with NBC, and it was in prime time. The big story was Dale Sr. Had died on the track at Daytona, which was a NASCAR-owned track, and now here they're back. What's going to happen to Dale Jr.? And amazingly, he wins the race. And afterwards, even more amazing, is the driver that finished in second said, I wasn't going to pass Dale Jr. And the guy in third said the same thing. So we know the guy in second and third both said they weren't even, their intention was not to get in the way of Dale Jr. winning. And again, it seemed kind of like fixed race.
All right, why isn't that just the rare example of sports nostalgic sentimentalism? I mean, it's like, dude lost his dad, let him win.
Well, if that's the case, though, then it's still fixed. It's still not as it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be everybody's out there to win. And this, if that's, you know, you want to say, okay, well, and people, the other drivers did say that. One guy questioned Dale Jr.'s car in that race because it's a restrictor place race, which should even out all the cars, and he was passing cars three and four at a time, which shouldn't happen in a restrictor plate race.
Right.
And guys questioned his car, but they said, you know what, there's a good thing that he won. Again, but it's a primetime contest where people are wondering, will Jr., you know, win? What will happen? He's on the track where his father died. What's going to happen? It was all focused on him. He won the race. Ratings were huge. NBC was happy. They just signed a big contract with NASCAR. I mean, again, right. How much coincidence are you going to allow to happen before you start questioning, geez, I think maybe something's going on here.
Well, this will sound like sour grapes on my part, but I had a similar feeling about the NFL NFC Championship last year with the Saints playing the Vikings and this non-call that came at the end of the game when they clearly the Saints were going after Favre's knees. And they took him down. I mean, everybody wondered openly, where was the call? It made him totally skittish on passing. It ended up that, you know, even as he was running, he was still gimpy. It ends on an interception. But prior to that, there could easily have been a 15-yard penalty that they had given out earlier in the game against the Saints for going after his knees. I mean, they've been throwing flags for a lot less in the NFL for, you know, players, defensive players hitting below the waist.
Well, Tom Brady got hurt doing the exact same thing there, you know, big star,
right.
Lost the season because of that.
So why the non-call? And then I thought, well, you know, this is this thing. The storyline is created that, you know, this is about the Saints coming marching back in and, you know, that they're going to get back on top. And the city of New Orleans needs it.
Well,
and everybody's saying afterwards, oh, this is so good for New Orleans. And I thought, boy, that's just really, it would have been great for the Twin Cities. It would have been great for Favre, but it looks like it felt like the fix was in on that call.
Well, that's the thing. That's one of the things that people, you know, will shoot at me is they'll say, well, it's just sour grapes. When you say, well, that game was fixed, it's sour grapes because my team didn't win. And that's like you say, that's what it sounds like with you. You're like, well, I wanted the Vikings to win. I didn't get the call. You know, was it fixed or, you know, am I just boo-hooing about what didn't happen? But again, when, like I say, when you start putting together TV ratings, storylines, the money that's being made, and then you put all that evidence together, then you can have something that's a little more meat on the bone there.
Right.
And especially with the Saints, because the Saints, I think even worse was the year right after Hurricane Katrina. The team basically turned over two-thirds of its roster. They had an entirely new coaching staff that came off a 3-13 season where they didn't have a home stadium, and everything in the NFL was geared toward the rebirth of the Saints, and that was symptomatic for the rebirth of New Orleans. And suddenly the Saints got all the way to the NFC Championship game, one game away from the Super Bowl, with a team that should not have been that good.
Well, and that, you know, I know we've been talking about professional sports, but let's talk about college a little bit and what's happened with the USC Trojans in the time that we have before the top of the hour. I mean, here's another case of another college team getting caught doing the things which college teams were supposedly taught a lesson on many years ago, giving money to players and giving services to players. And turning a college program into a professional program like it's not already. But now they've lost they essentially lose the title. They lose the 12 victories that got them to the title. They lose, and there's, you know, some discussion whether Reggie Bush would be able to keep his Heisman trophy. I think that, you know, that again points to there's a lot of forces out there that don't get a lot of publicity. Is it just now that people are learning about this? How was this maintained as a secret for so long? And how did the school not have any idea that this money was getting passed to players?
Well, exactly. And I think even worse is, as you said, well, they're going to take their, wins away from them. No, no, they're not. I mean, they may take them off the books or whatever, but they already won those games. They already won the championships. They already made all that money selling their jerseys, selling out the stadium on their TV, getting in the Rose Bowl and all that. So really, they're really not punishing them. And college sports are so corrupt on a different level than professional sports. I mean, you could do another 3 hours on that alone. Because, the players are basically unpaid servants of the schools. Sure, they get their, scholarships, but they can't hold a job because of their scholarship. So it opens them up to all sorts of corruption. It opens up to bribes. It opens them up to, gambling. It opens them up to all sorts of things. And a lot of college games, even more than professional games, have been fixed by the mafia and gamblers because the students are so ripe for the picking.
Right. Although I would say, although I think your point is fair about that it doesn't retroactively cause the USC Trojans harm, I think it does. It causes them harm in the future because if they're taking away 30 scholarships, right? They're taking away all postseason appearances, taking away all bowl games. Then it's not a death penalty. But that's like a very, that's almost like a life penalty. I mean, what that's going to do is suck the life out of the program. That, there are kids right now that they've said, the NBA has said, or sorry, that the NCAA has said, juniors and seniors with the Trojans, they can switch to another team without losing any of their eligibility. Well, so how many Trojans are just going to bail right now? If they have dreams of playing in the NFL, they can't play on a team that's not getting airtime.
But the
Right?
crazy thing is all the people, too, who profited from it, like the coach Pete Carroll, like, say, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, they're the ones who all profited from those illegal times, and they're all out of USC now already. The same
Right.
thing happened with Memphis in college basketball, the guy, John Calipari. He left
Right.
Memphis after winning, went to a different college, and all of a sudden they found all these recruiting violations. Didn't affect Calipari. He was gone.
Right.
Didn't care.
Yep, Pete Carroll's gone, that's for sure. All right, well, that's where we'll leave it for now. The fix is in the showbiz manipulations that go on in Major League Sports. Where are you with this? Specific game, specific incident, or just a general response to Brian Toohey coming up next on Coast to Coast? This is Ian Punnett.